What is up, Austin?
Oh, hello. What is going on? What is up, freaks? We've got a great tradition. We're continuing here. Adam, you're going to sit next to me because we're... let's give it up for Gary, first off, as we always do. Incredible week. I don't know about you guys, but I'm exhausted. This is a one-day conference, but there's been a cottage industry of satellite events that have popped up, and it's now a whole week event.
We're getting old.
We are. We are. But yeah, this is what we do. We've been doing this for, what, 4 or 5 years now, where we end.
This is year four.
Yeah, this is year four. We end the conference with a live show. We don't have a list. We have guests with us. We have the Podfather himself, Adam Curry, Ryan Gentry from Lightning Labs, and Grant Gilliam from 1031.
Ryan, did you join us last year?
Yeah, I think it was me and Udi that joined
y'all
last year.
Oh, you said that. Okay.
Yeah, we got...
It's been a long year.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We got some shit for bringing Udi on, like, 8 months later. People are like, yeah, you guys had this guy on stage. But...
Not canceled yet.
Not yet. Who's going to Udi on stage is the question. Moving forward. But...
is it a verb?
Maybe now.
Did you just say Udi on... Who's going to Udi on stage?
Yeah.
I like it.
Matt, we're just going to continue our debate from Thursday. They got pretty heated, and we've been debating it for 2 days since. How much energy will the Bitcoin mining industry take up? Is it closer to 0% or 50% in 20 years?
Of, like, the entire world's energy?
Yes.
Correct.
So do you remember Drew Bonsall has a theory about this, the EO presentation about, like, 2-3 years ago. That he calls the Nakamoto point, which I think is great. And it is like that specific number, like what is the steady state of the Earth's total generation of electricity that will be devoted to Bitcoin mining. And he thinks that, you know, it'll settle out around kind of like 1%.
So Drew's on my team. And you can't call people bearish just because they don't think it's going to be
50%. It's not my fault you're bearish.
Well, it's like there's, you know, in the sense, right, there's two relevant numbers. There is the numerator, the amount that the Bitcoin network consumes, and then there's the denominator, which is the total amount of generation. I want to build mini nukes on, you know, every corner, and I want the bottom of the denominator.
Okay, so we're going to have a network that is the base of a global open financial system, and it's only going to use 1% of the world's energy.
Because the whole rest of it is going to be powering space factories, you know, ship all of this stuff up to where we can, you know, be manufacturing spaceships to send us to Mars. That's going to be energy intensive, you know?
Okay, so before we continue, I would like a show of hands. Raise your hand if you think Bitcoin energy usage in 20 years will be closer to 0% than 50%.
You said 50 years.
20 years. It's 20 years.
Yeah. 20 years. Okay, so we got a room full of fucking bears. Raise your hand if you think it'll be closer to 50%. Okay, those are my people. Adam, what do you think?
I'm kind of with Ryan because I've been following SMRs, you know, small medium reactors for 10 years, and you know it's just regulatory hassle. But there's no reason why we wouldn't have. I'm for backyard nukes. I mean, I'm already experimenting here down the road. So I think there'll just be so much more supply. I mean, we're talking about limited, you know, resources, just slow resources. Nuclear could really change. I just think we'll have more power available in general.
You can't make enough ASICs to do all that, I don't think.
Well, I mean, in 20 years, ASICs are going to be commoditized. They'll be easy to get. They'll have long life cycles. I mean, we might see nuclear reactors that are only mining. Like, they'll just in the middle of nowhere, just mining Bitcoin. And I would say that if you ask Marty his current energy mix, it's around 60% is devoted to Bitcoin mining. So he's a little bit of a hypocrite here.
This is true. This was where you stumped me and began to slowly convince me that you may be right.
It's important, you know, that we get Grant on the record here. Grant, are you a bear or a bull?
I'm a bull. I'm at 26%.
26? Oh, round up.
That way I can be a bull.
Grant's a good mediator. He sits in between me and Marty and makes sure that he's always...
I think my energy mix
sort of mining is over 50% in some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but not everybody's going to be a miner. Or is that going to be the case?
Do you think energy waste goes down with hyper-Bitcoinization?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, what's people's current energy mix? People's current energy mix is what? ACs, heat?
Cars.
Cars. TVs, I guess, to a degree.
I mean, if you go buy food, you're paying for that energy. That's hidden in the front end of that supply chain.
So you don't think a bigger portion of that will be Bitcoin? Oh, Marty's on the record, by the way, saying under 5%. Currently, the energy mix is like 0.1%, 0.2%.
Yeah.
So part of this is, you think, like, individuals are going to be running ASICs, like, in their homes? It's going
to
be part of
I think my dad told me to turn off the lights for 15 years, and I never turned off the lights until I discovered Bitcoin mining.
Because, like, so to your point about... nuclear reactors that are out in the wild somewhere that are just devoted to Bitcoin. Like, the dream that I've had for a long time is, you know, you go to places, you know, a lot of the world still is not electrified at all, right? Doesn't have electrical power generation. And you could totally see, but there's, you know, rivers that haven't been dammed yet. There's, you know, space where you could deploy nuclear reactor, and especially these smaller modular ones. You know, like, if you have something that's just a shipping container that can guarantee you 10 megawatts of generation for 10 years, right? You could just slam one of those down in the middle of the Congo and start mining on it, right? And then eventually, the local people, right, once they develop enough demand for it, they kind of price out the ASICs, and now they have an electrified little area where they have, you know, modern amenities. That's kind of, I think, like the dream of deploying these things and, you know, creating stranded energy that then the local people start, you know, utilizing and buying. And you know, I think that just makes the generation just explode of total energy generation that we have worldwide.
No, I mean, I agree. I just think they'll use about 49% of it.
You think, man, yeah, that just seems so high. Because, again, you got to think about all the energy that is devoted just to, like, manufacturing, to power plants, to, like, all of that serious stuff.
Well, we can group in, like, manufacturing ASICs into that, too, just to bump my number up a little bit.
I'll have to go back and watch Drew's presentation, because I don't remember how he ended up at 1%, but I remember there was some math behind it, and it seemed impressive.
It's funny. This conversation is going to turn into a headline, Bitcoiners want to use 50% of all the world's energy.
Wait, see, Marty really cares about the ESG narrative, so he's trying to protect it a little bit. But I'm willing to own Bitcoin's energy usage, and we're going to eat the world.
Yeah, but speaking of the small modular reactors in that space, we actually got a good Bitcoin ally who joined the team of Oklo, which is working on these SMRs, Brian Gitt, who's been doing some really good education around energy usage and its importance, and I can confidently say that he's a Bitcoiner as well, and so getting them through the red tape is probably his first goal, and then beyond that, there's some really interesting things you can do, like Ryan just described, and that was also, I believe, the main thesis of Ross Stevens when he wrote his initial shareholder letter about why he's getting into Bitcoin, is you can create these generation assets out in these disparate places, mine Bitcoin to create a revenue stream immediately, and then as the population prices out the miners, you just unplug and move somewhere else.
Yep.
I have been experimenting a little bit at home out in Fredericksburg. I was given two S9s by Nick, which is really fun, you know, like plug them in, it heats up the whole garage. I get 100,000 sats a week, maybe. But we lose our power off in the hill country, so I have a whole house generator, runs on propane, is like liquid gold these days. But I discovered something called gasification, which goes back to the Great Depression. Gasifiers, people were driving their cars and trucks on wood. And so now guys are out in the hill country building these gasifiers where you literally just put wood, you can put, pine cones, you can put anything, you can put dead animals in there. It'll burn, and it will actually run any generator. I mean, I can see a time where we're using alternative fuels decentralized like that just for our mining. And we got a lot of wood out there. It can go for a long time. So there's all kinds of, I'm with you, but really because I just see more and more energy becoming available. Really a lot more.
Yeah, a ton more. And we do have trees, but we're cutting them down and sending them over to Europe so that they can LARP about ESG.
F in the chat. F in the chat for Europe.
brutal.
Well, I think burning trees, we call it biomass energy. It's renewable.
Yes, it's renewable, even though the wood creates more CO2 than coal. So we live in a cloud world. We all know that. We're not.
That's what my fucking kids do.
Can we continue the controversial questions? Narrative.
Yeah, if you want to, let's go.
Show of hands, who thinks that Bitcoin will never raise the 21 million supply cap? Who thinks that we will add inflation to Bitcoin at some point in the future?
Don't be shy.
Kick him out. Kick him out. Does anyone on stage agree with him?
Well, so I was actually gonna ask the question before you posed it, which is 50 years, the Bitcoin network is taking up 50% of the Earth's electrical generation. Is that because we just have a crazy robust fee market? Or is it because Peter Todd has his way and we've added tail emission?
It's because we have a crazy robust fee market.
All right, let's rock and roll. How do we get a crazy robust fee market?
Just wait for it.
Yeah.
Like more people use Bitcoin every day.
Yeah, yep. I mean.
Number go up.
I think. Okay. And the people, particularly Adam and Ryan, Adam with Podcasting 2.0 and Ryan pushing a lot of these initiatives via Lightning Labs, like the utility is there. I mean, we'll get value for this podcast streamed to us directly in sats. Mm-hmm. I think the whole fee market debate, I've been public about this and people have hopped in my DMs like, no, this is serious, you should take it. I think it's just mental masturbation. You cannot try to project future Bitcoin activity based off of historical activity to date because it's just going to be a completely different world because adoption is going to be orders of magnitude higher than it is now. And then on top of that, my favorite theory that Pierre Rochard incepted into my brain years ago is that you can apply Jevons' paradox to UTXO, which Jevons' paradox typically refers to like oil and gas. It's a paradox because as you become more efficient with something, with a molecule, a hydrocarbon, you think you'll use less because you need less to do more work. But what you find is that creates inherent utility, which drives demand further and you use it more. And so I think that same concept can be applied to a UTXO, things like Taproot, being able to use it to put it in a hash time lock contract to open up a Lightning channel. And there are a number of different utilities that will be built on top of the UTXO set.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you'll allow me to shill, of course, the newest one of those is the new Taro protocol, right?
Very controversial.
Very controversial, but...
Let's steal Mantaro.
Let's steal Mantaro. Specifically, what Taro does that lines up with this conversation is it allows for more utility per UTXO, right? The way I like to describe it is what Taro will allow is if you hold a UTXO right now, it's just Bitcoin, right? And in the future, soon, actually sooner than y'all expect, you'll be able to, you know, mint an asset where your UTXO will all of a sudden be filled up with little mini UTXOs. Right, that's what these Taro assets will be and how they'll behave on the network. So you could hold, you know, a stable coin, you could hold Atom Bucks, whatever you want. And none of this, of course, competes with Bitcoin. It all specifically adds utility to each Bitcoin UTXO.
Ryan, why, if I'm gonna use shitcoins, why don't I just use them on shitcoins?
Because then you have Justin Sun as the dependency for your assets, whereas the Bitcoin network, just have the Bitcoin network.
I mean, jokes aside, first of all, I think all of these assets do compete with Bitcoin and they will lose. But in all seriousness, when I look at Lightning, I look at Lightning as a set of trade-offs. And we chose those trade-offs to maintain censorship resistance and be able to use Bitcoin natively. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to use a centralized stablecoin already, wouldn't it go to reason that the UX and the cost would be, the UX would be better, the cost would be cheaper if I used a centralized chain to work with them rather than adopt the trade-offs that Lightning presents, you know, channel management, liquidity, all of the above?
I think what we're finding is that actually the stablecoin experience on these other blockchains, because we know the blockchains don't scale, the second they get popular, the experience degrades, right? It gets expensive, and there is no payments network because none of these other networks are designed to be payments networks that are as fast or as cheap as the Lightning network, right? And the specific reason, you know, why Taro is such a big focus for us in stablecoins is like last year was this amazing year of emerging markets adoption for Lightning, right? We got Bitnob in Nigeria, BIPA in Brazil, Neutron Pay in Vietnam. You know, there's all of these Lightning entrepreneurs globally that had this amazing year, you know, thanks to, I think, spurred on by Jack Mahler's, who we heard this morning in El Salvador, right? That just caused this huge wave of adoption. And so we kept talking to all of these entrepreneurs, you know, helping them out with their infrastructure. And by the end of the year, they were like, okay, we got all the Bitcoiners, right? We've acquired all the Bitcoiners in our geo that we can, and we're continuing to push education, blah, 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 blah. But like the next tier of user, they love the experience. They love the promise of censorship-resistant financial services. They want stablecoins. Like they want the dollar, right? They can't handle the volatility of Bitcoin, the asset. They don't have enough savings to deal with it for whatever reason, right? It's like they want the dollar. And so for these startups, these Lightning startups, to continue growing, continue acquiring new users, and continuing to help their users understand why Bitcoin as a savings technology is, you know, the best savings technology out there, they kind of need these stable coins as a Trojan horse. And so for these entrepreneurs, they don't want to run Tron nodes, right? Like they don't want to run Ethereum nodes. They just want to run Bitcoin services, Bitcoin architecture with just a little stablecoin flavor on top.
Can I ask a question about Taro? Because I'm trying to understand it. So from what I understand, let me ask, because there's kind of a difference between a shitcoin and stablecoin, but you said something, you can mint a token. So is it true then I could have one, just like a Lightning channel, so that, you know, I create a channel with someone else, except instead of Satoshis in there, I put beef bits. I'm just going to call it something. And it's just in that channel. Maybe we have 10 other people in a channel. It's not outside of that. So we can trade our beef bits back and forth, whatever we want to do with that, but we settle on chain ultimately. Is that how it's supposed to work? So I can come up with anything, or does it have to be some coin, an asset that exists outside of this ecosystem?
Any arbitrary thing, I think you would find it really hard to find a counterparty that wants to trade beef bits with you.
Right.
Careful, I mean, maybe.
Careful now.
But it's arbitrary. Like, this is the thing about Taro that I'm most excited about beyond the specific application, is this brings the spirit of permissionless innovation back to Bitcoin.
Well, to be clear here, Adam, you don't have like a dedicated channel for your shitcoins. The cool part about Taro is that it uses the existing liquidity. So it's only on the endpoints. So the receiver and the sender need to recognize it, but you use the existing Lightning liquidity. And the main argument for it benefiting Bitcoin is if we bring stablecoins to Lightning, then all of a sudden routing fees on Lightning are way more profitable because they're routing all the shit coins as well, rather than just Bitcoin, but it's the same shared liquidity. It's not a specific channel.
And as a routing node, thank you for that explanation. And as a routing node, you can stay Bitcoin only, right? You can stay totally Bitcoin only and not be connected to any of these Taro assets. You'll just all of a sudden see volume numbers start to grow up. In a way, I think.
Okay. Is there an argument that it actually drives more Lightning channel activity, 100%. Which pumps the base layer fees?
100%. I mean, I think it's Javon's paradox, right? Like, it just makes, like, the TAM right now, the total addressable market for just Bitcoin payments is, like, you know, not that big, right? Like, I think Arcane Research projected that last year, the total Lightning network did, like, $200 to $250 million of volume, which is, like, you know, pretty good. Until you look at like the big card networks, Visa and MasterCard in 2021 did $20 trillion of volume, right? And that's across, you know, 150 currency pairs and stuff like that. So I just think that, you know, there is one strategy that is, you know, we stay Bitcoin only and we wait and we educate people on why they should just adopt Bitcoin and just spend that. And that is a perfectly fine strategy. But, you know, a different strategy is that we meet people kind of where they are. And we go kind of vampire attack the fiat systems and bring the capabilities that people want to use already and that they're comfortable with to Bitcoin in a Bitcoin-friendly way, in an incentive-compatible way, and juice all the volume on our networks by making them multi-asset networks.
But, Ryan, to bring it back, I mean, you said these businesses don't want to run a Tron node. No one runs Tron nodes. There's like 3 Tron nodes. Like, the business doesn't have to run a Tron node because they don't care about censorship resistance because they're using a centralized stablecoin already. So if the argument is that, like, it's going to boost fees on Lightning Network, it's going to boost fees on chain, well, if the fees go up, people will just choose stable coins on whatever the newest shit coin is that is more centralized and cheaper. Like, if we already saw this happen with Strike. Strike was using Ethereum Tether, and the fees went up, so they switched to Tron Tether. And the Strike user has no idea which chain they're using. No one's running Tron nodes. It doesn't matter because you're trusting Tether anyway.
But so as you know, that the architecture of the Lightning Network is different from these blockchains, right? If fees will not start going up on the Lightning Network, because if somebody starts charging fees that are out of line with the rest of the market, it is permissionless for somebody to open up a channel and compete with them and undercut them on fees, right? Lightning scales horizontally with more capital being added, right? And so that is why architecturally it will, as volume increases, routing fees increase for individual nodes, people start realizing there's a money-making opportunity here, and we saw this happen last year. They spin up a node and they start getting in on the action, and the network becomes, you know, more scalable, more robust, more decentralized over time.
Oh. I'm bullish.
You're bullish?
Yeah.
Not on Bitcoin, only on Taro.
Yeah. No, I think it adds utility. If you don't want to use it, you don't have to use it. So.
And of course, like, and this was, you know, the team went through like great pains. Specifically to design this to where you can run your full node, accept your Bitcoins, be Bitcoin only, have no idea that Taro exists, and be completely self-sovereign and be, you know, it doesn't impact you at all, right? It is an overlay network, just like how the Lightning Network is an overlay network. There's no op return usage. You know, it is specifically an opt-in thing that we think will help bring, you know, more users to the network, and especially help, you know, be a Trojan horse for Bitcoin infrastructure, right? Getting Lightning nodes and Bitcoin nodes in, you know, more places run by more businesses with more users, who will, you know, eventually come to realize that they should have just been holding Bitcoin the whole time.
I mean, I definitely agree with that. Do you think? I mean, I understand the appeal of stablecoins or so-called stablecoins. Sats mm-hmm. are the real stablecoins.
It's undeniable that there's extreme demand.
I understand the demand in the short term. Okay. Do you think that the number one way people will transfer these so-called stablecoins before they get completely obsoleted will ever be Lightning? Or do you think it's just a small portion, but that still helps Bitcoin liquidity and still helps Bitcoin infrastructure, still helps Bitcoin adoption? Like, is this a tiny portion of stablecoin usage, or is this the dominant way that people use fiat-backed
It's a really
assets?
Good question. If I can, like, you know, be a little elusive with my answer, I would say I don't think that payments are a dominant use case for stablecoins right now today at all. Right, I think the dominant use case for stablecoins right now is for leverage and trading, and that is, there's not a lot of activity on the Lightning Network because you can't have leverage on Lightning. There's none of that, and there's not a lot of trading activity on the Lightning Network. I feel very confident in saying that the dominant, the vast majority of stablecoin usage for payments will be on Lightning, absolutely, 100%. You know, will we get the leverage and the speculation? Like, maybe not, right? Like, just because Lightning isn't really built for that. But for, like, the actual utility of using it for payments, for buying goods, for doing remittances, you know, for all of the things that Lightning is good for today, I definitely think that it'll happen here because Lightning is just better architecturally. It's designed specifically for this use case. And so it scales way better. It has all the bells and whistles. It has a bunch of companies focused specifically on payments and remittances who, you know, many of whom are here today. So yeah, I think we're definitely going to win the payments use case for sure.
I will give you one thing. I'm always grateful to have you on stage with us, but Lightning Labs should be grateful to have you because we were on stage for like 10 minutes before you started shilling Taro. So that was pretty impressive.
It was about utility of UTXOs.
I didn't bring up Taro. He brought up Taro. Oh,
I thought you did.
We were talking about tail emission, and somehow Taro got brought up. I don't even know how we got on this tangent.
That's why they paid me the big bucks.
Yeah, I think considering everything that's going on this year, and since we have Grant on stage, I'm really curious. Obviously, 1031, we're a Bitcoin-only dedicated VC. We've seen a lot of calamity in the shitcoin markets. Terra Luna, Three Arrows getting reckless out there. and even some lenders in the Bitcoin space getting into some precarious situations. Do you think this year has been a signal to markets like, hey, maybe we're not crazy for focusing on Bitcoin and Bitcoin only?
Yeah, I do. I mean, there hasn't been too much impact within pure Bitcoin. But so in some sense, it is a validation. But I think that most people still don't recognize that. I think within this community, we all are saying, well, yes, it's obvious that the strategy that we're taking makes sense. But I think outside of people who are focused on Bitcoin, I think they just they aren't yet realizing that. So I think that that's still continues to be the edge that we have for people who are focused in this space.
I'm a nose breather, sorry.
Cranking you from behind.
That's right. Sorry, did we cut you? Mike, you just completely killed the flow.
A huge shout out to Mike, who's been working behind the scenes for 5 years now. Also a ride or die freak. He asked us what we should put on screen, and he said, he told Marty specifically he's not allowed to put porn on screen.
Would never do that.
And huge shout out to Gazala with the lawnmower reference. That was pretty, pretty great.
Yeah, we were prepping Gazala earlier today.
Marty mowed his neighbor's lawn last week for RHR because he was mowing it during RHR. So he just got up in the middle of the stream, walked over and was like, I will mow your lawn for you. Please stop. And then got back on the stream and then had to mow it after we finished.
Mowing lawns is therapeutic. So I wasn't even that mad about it. It was just like, hey, we're recording.
I mean, you send an angry tweet out. What was it like? You had to use an electric mower?
Yeah, it was. He cucked me twice. First during the show, and then he made me use an electric mower, which is pretty poetic considering my stance on ESG. While we have Adam on stage, this is a big debate we have, Matt and I, on this show, time and time again. Are the people that are like pulling the strings incompetent, or are they nefarious, in your opinion?
They're over-socialized and under-educated, as always. They don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah. So you're on the incompetence team?
Of course. Okay. No, it's, we talked about it before. You know, to really understand Bitcoin, it just takes a little bit. And then once you get it, you're just like, oh. And then, you know, it really is true. Bitcoin changes you. It's so true. I gave the example in Miami that fuck you money back in the 80s was, you know, it's like, look, I got a gold Rolex, fuck you money. Now it's like, I can send my money to you and no one can fuck with it. That's fuck you money. You know, this is a big deal. It's a really big deal. So that's where I'm at. It just takes a while for people to, you know, dude, there's so many things, there's so much cognitive dissonance that people just don't see, you know, things that are clear as day. I mean, could do a million examples, but, you know, now that the guard is changing and all the, you know, Burks and Fauci and everyone's ejecting and the CDC is clearly going to be the fall guy for, oh, yeah, we didn't communicate it right, you know. And now it's just like, okay, now just, you know, vaccinate, unvaccinate just doesn't make a difference. But look at how people still are telling us we need another booster. Well, it doesn't work. If we need it, it's like, it's... These are just situations that we get into. It's you know, it is a form of mass formation. You know, it's a weird hypnosis. Turn off your television would be my first advice in general. Just, you know, turn it off. And social media, because they're fucking with you. They're fucking with you. They're fucking with you.
No, in terms of Bitcoin adoption too, it actually. Be curious to get your thoughts, having been around the block, the tech boom and podcasting in general. Are there any parallels you're noticing in the adoption rate of Bitcoin in its stage?
Well, it's been here for, you know, for 13 years. That's crazy. I mean, what technology has not really changed in 13 years? They were building stuff onto it, but really that's just solid and just working that way. And that no one's in charge of it, this is the biggest problem. This is why it's being fought so hard, because it's so obvious that it's a danger. It's the same thing as RSS, which I think is why I have such an affinity for it. You know, some of you may be old enough to remember Google Reader. This is before
you know, so back in the day it was weblogs. And just like podcasts today, weblogs in the day, I'm going to start a weblog, I'm going to have advertising, I'm going to make lots of money publishing. And so it was really only Andrew Sullivan who made any money. You know, so it took a while for people to understand that. But there was a great ecosystem, and it was RSS feeds from these blogs. And to this day, almost every publication has an RSS feed, literally just for syndicating under the hood to partners. It's a part of the system, just like Bitcoin and even Lightning is part of the system. So they try to kill it. I mean, literally, Google killed off Google Reader so they could start, what the fuck was that thing called? Yeah, it was Google Plus, exactly, with your circles. There was some other dumb thing they came up. It's all to kill that. Twitter was originally, and you know, Twitter was a podcast company before they pivoted, and they literally were using RSS feeds mm-hmm. for everybody's feed, which is why it all failed, of course, because they tried to centralize RSS. That's exactly the opposite of what it's for. But 20 years later, so it's, you know, the older sister of Bitcoin is still here, still thriving, not being able to be broken. But it's not something that is at front of mind for people, you know. So we've got these applications. So when people, when someone boosts a podcast, you know, they're not even thinking about what's, it's amazing any of this shit works, man. I can't believe it. You know, so you're getting a podcast and then you're shooting sats into the fucking, you're spraying sats everywhere and it arrives in places. And no one can stop it. It's highly irritating to authority, obviously. Highly irritating.
Stay humble, spray sats.
Now we're talking. I love it.
Yeah, no, they are going to attack Bitcoin. That's been another big theme of the week, is like the narrative on how they're going to try to attack Bitcoin, how we can steel man against that. Obviously, energy is one of their main attack vectors. They come at the energy usage and the energy mix, which is weird that they're trying to signal out Bitcoin and moralize energy usage. And privacy, obviously, Bank Secrecy Act and all the hell that's wrought over the last 50 years is making it hard for people to transact privately. Obviously, Tornado Cash just got sanctioned. And so I guess just throw this out to everybody up here, like what... do you think we can do to front run these narratives and harden the narrative front before the attacks get really serious?
I think like number one is something that you say a lot is don't accept the frame, right? Don't accept the frame where, you know, they say, oh, Bitcoin uses too much energy, right? Just reject it entirely and say, no. For human civilization to flourish, we need to be generating tons and tons and tons of energy, right? Global GDP is directly correlated with energy generation. We need to be producing tons of energy. And actually, Bitcoin is an incentive mechanism to make sure that we are producing, you know, clean and cheap energy. And so rejecting the frame outright and remembering that actually Bitcoin is good for the world, both as a network and an asset, and it deserves to be protected. And anybody that is saying that that's not true is either, you know, like you were saying, miseducated or nefarious, over-socialized, undereducated, right? And so I think that's the most important thing, is that we're actually right and we are winning, and to not be, you know, dissuaded by authorities that want to distract us for their own nefarious ends.
I think we are seeing some politicians that are rejecting the frame too, because you're 100%. Seeing some of them come out. I don't remember which ones, but saying, you know, privacy is actually a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I think the more that we normalize that, especially on the privacy side, it can only help. You know, I think, you know, we're big believers in privacy. We've invested in some privacy oriented businesses. And I personally think right now it's sort of this fringe community that really cares about it. But I think over time, it's going to be more on the business side and institutions who realize, you know, I'm not a public company. I'm not used to having my books and records out and available for anyone to do chain analysis and figure out, how much Bitcoin do I have and where am I sending it? What am I doing with it? And I think that's going to be a longer term theme on the business side and institution, that, they'll be more focused on privacy. So I think the more we try to normalize that, the better it will be.
And I think to build on that, With privacy is a great example. Like, I continually see these themes with Bitcoin and Bitcoin-related topics where, you know, Bitcoiners are right about something, and I think energy generation is a perfect example. We're right about something, there's naysaying, but then some event happens that just opens everybody's eyes. We're like, oh, maybe these people are right all the time, right? And I think the energy crisis in Europe right now is like the perfect example, where Europe had been shutting down nuclear plants. They'd kind of like, you know, not built any sort of energy sovereignty themselves, made themselves dependent on Russia, which is something that, you know, energy sovereignty has been a big deal.
Ryan. Mm-hmm. They're doing this to kill people. You realize that. This is nothing to do with energy.
Wait,
they're eugenicists. They want less people. They want you dead.
It's not incompetence. I agree. They want to kill you. Okay.
They do. They do. I think we should actually advocate for the opposite. Let us use as much dirty ass energy as possible to kill ourselves. Just let us use it for Bitcoin. I'm telling you, they don't give a shit about that. It's lies. They mm-hmm. just want less people. My daughter lives in Europe. She can't afford gas, can't afford electricity right now. The food is outrageous. And it's all there. The North Sea is a gas field.
Yeah.
They got cows in the Netherlands. Oh, they're trying to get rid of them. So I'm just saying.
I understand.
That's the frame I'm rejecting.
I totally agree with you 100%. And I think the thing that's been interesting to me in the last couple of months watching it has been watching public opinion just like totally shift in favor of nuclear energy in places like Germany, where they're like, oh yeah, holy shit, we've been lied to for the last 20 years. And you guys are totally, obviously, catastrophically wrong. I think the same thing will hold true for things like privacy. Where, you know, like, yeah, not many people care right now, but we know that we're right. And, like, eventually there will be something that wakes everybody up to be like, oh, my God, okay, we've been lied to for 20 years. Like, oh, good thing there's all these tools from these committed community members, the Bitcoiners, that are ready to use and available for us. And so I think that's the thing. Reject the frame, stay the course, and, you know that there are people that are lying to you.
Yes. That just killed it.
Sorry.
We have...
I was going to say, going back to privacy, though, like, there will be an event that sort of makes it obvious, like, oh, we need to focus on this. Like,
what's that event going to look like?
I don't know, but, like, just to...
Maybe a trucker protest?
Just to throw an argument. Yeah, that. To throw an argument back. Like, we saw
no one remembers the trucker protest.
It opened up some minds, but we see, like, Equifax, Facebook, all these hacks.
Like, an open source dev, you know, getting hit with sanctions and getting mm-hmm. arrested or something to that effect. Maybe it would look like that.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
So that's the point. Yep. Are people actually noticing?
I think as people get burned, they will learn. But it's going to be a slow fucking slog. And I'm pretty bullish on all this energy production talk, but I still can't believe you guys think it'll only be 1% of global energy usage. We have about... Wow, did he just rug pull us on the clock?
It's just rug.
Did you just rug pull us on the clock?
Rug 10 minutes.
Okay, we're going to... This has been fantastic, but I really love for these live things to have Q&A, and he just rug pulled us on the clock, so we have 12 minutes left, so we're going to jump into Q&A. But before we do, I just want to thank everyone who's been involved in our Defending BTC campaign for HODL Not. This was an initiative that was spurred over the course of less than 2 months. A lot of the work happened in the last 4 weeks. We went public a week and a half ago, and we've raised 65 Bitcoin for the cause. That's over $1 million, like $1.3 million, including 5 Bitcoin that was raised at the dinner last night at BitBlock Boom Dinner. So that's all you guys. That was no one from the internet.
I got a tie and a hot date out of it.
Marty paid $1,200 for a tie he's never going to wear just for the cause.
$600. It was $6.5 million cents. Oh, that's
$1,200.
Holy shit. I'm going on $10,000.
I love that. People suck at sats math. You do the auctions and sats, and then they have massive regret the next day. They're like, oh my God, what did I just spend?
I did have the cognitive ability at that time to spend and replace. I replaced
it. Well, anyway, we appreciate your sacrifice. It's for a good cause.
It's not a sacrifice. It's for a very good cause.
So should we do Q&A?
Yes, sir.
Let's do it.
Anyone got any questions for us? It's a special moment.
In the back there. Mr. Kaysen.
Yeah, do you have one?
Oh, no. We're just going to have to scream. We'll repeat it.
All right. You guys brought up a lot of pretty political issues
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, I think it starts with messaging, right? Like trying to wake people up. But as we've been discussing, many people tend not to do that unless they've been burned personally. First thing you can do is flee to red states that respect civil liberties and private property rights. It's part of the reason I'm in Texas. Mm-hmm. I would imagine part of the reason you're in Tennessee. You've moved to Texas as well, Adam. Grant is still trying to escape the hellscape in New York City, but yeah.
Not easy.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been partial towards, that's why we have the podcast, that's why we do the newsletter, that's why I focus on Bitcoin, is just get the message out there and educate people. And I do think what Adam started with podcasting and the flourishing of alternative media since that content medium has been released is having a material effect on people being aware of these issues. But yeah,
so
they are going to come after us.
So Marty said messaging, they're already coming after us. The fact that we say no KYC Bitcoin instead of just Bitcoin and surveilled Bitcoin is proof that their attack has worked. They have normalized KYC completely. Most newcomers into Bitcoin are completely bagged and tagged on entry, and that information will be used against you. So use that as you will. I will say that everything starts with education, and then it starts with good tooling. We need basically a combination of good education and good tools, and then when people realize the need, they will seek them out.
That's why, again, I'm pumping podcasting 2.0, but I think it's an incredible gift to the Bitcoin stack because it allows anybody, just for listening to a podcast, to be get onboarded onto Bitcoin with limited to no KYC.
I like the question. I think they're much more sophisticated. I don't think the throwing in jail necessarily will happen. I think they're much more sophisticated, just debasing our lives and killing us slow, or keeping us good enough to operate a data glove in the metaverse, whatever. It's clear that they can arrest us, they can kill us, but Bitcoin, that's still going to be here. Maybe it's worth dying for. I don't know. We'll have to see, but that we possibly might come to that conclusion. I don't think it's going to be that bad. That's why I agree. Use cases, there's little use cases, Beef Initiative, Podcasting 2.0, lots of LNURL type of functionality, you know, tipping, QR codes, LNURL pay. There's lots of ways you can use it. I know hodling is a big thing, and I'm a hodler too. But I do have just an active wallet that I replace. I send something out, I put it back in. I find that really satisfying. I understand the privacy issues. There's things we can do, things we can't do. But again, I think it's worth it. I think it's really worth the fight. So I'm not bringing it on, I guess.
Wait, you're breaking the restraining order. You got to go to the back. I'm messing with
you. You almost did it.
This is mainly for Adam because of your European background, but in the aftermath of COVID, and now we're possibly facing a winter where Western Europeans and very technologically advanced countries could actually be freezing. I think it was like the Swiss energy minister the other day said he thinks there may actually be civil unrest in Switzerland, which is like the most orderly place ever, if they start to freeze. Do you think there's still a lot of slack left in Western Europe's kind of social trust system, or do you think they're close to an edge, or where do you think they're at?
So the question is, things are getting pretty bad in Europe with the energy situation. How exactly did you phrase it at the end?
Well, I'm asking, do you think there's a lot of slack left in that social trust
system? Do you think people are going to revolt and people are going to stand up?
Do you think it's getting close?
No. People are fucking docile, man. The only people out there are the farmers. And look, I know the Dutch really well. I grew up there. And the Dutch are very social people. And they love saying, we're going to support the farmers. But after like day three, they're like, no, dude, like I need to build, use the highway. So they don't, it's not... what I think is going to happen is when Germans have to start burning wood again because they can't afford the gas, which has already been projected by the German government, I think eventually people will say, okay, we've had enough, but they have to experience it.
this is a whole generation that has not experienced anything but, you know, low interest, free fiat money flowing everywhere. It's over. It's over. It's over. You guys got in right under the wire. Congratulations. It's over. It's just over. So we'll see. But is there also, by the way, the Netherlands, when the Germans invaded in World War II, they capitulated within 16 hours and said, here's my bike. I mean, you know, it's and that was most of Europe where it kind of went that way. So I don't see enough resistance coming at all. So we all have to go through some really, really hard times before we start to understand it. And in a weird way, I hope it does happen. Because, you know, I went through the 70s when inflation was, and I was actually in the Netherlands in 72 when we had Carless Sunday. I mean, as a kid, you're like, wow, this is fucking cool. We were driving our bikes on the highway, but it was disruptive. And the inflation was insane, and all you saw your parents was looking like that. So, you know, they learned some things. We got to learn some things. But no, I don't see revolution coming, not here, not anywhere in the world. Everyone's pretty docile. We're all pretty happy with our mindless algoized entertainment. So time for some pain, probably.
Yeah, I mean,
get your beef.
It's late August.
Beefinitiative.com.
Still the summer, and German power prices just went over $1,000 a megawatt hour. Yeah. It's there's going to be a lot of pain this winter.
Now, can you mine profitably?
No.
That's a hard no.
I had to think about that for no. Any more questions?
I think we have time for one more question.
In the back.
So, let's say we're at the base, then they fight us, right? First they laughed at us, then they dismissed us. Now they're arresting developers, they're coming after privacy solutions. So, what are people going to do whenever big Bitcoin devs start getting arrested for privacy solutions? You know, are people going to stand up? Are people going to hold? You know, are people who are told
I don't think we can
repeat the question. So the question is, it appears we're entering the then they fight us stage. What are people going to do when developers that are working on Bitcoin privacy tools start getting targeted, arrested? Will people stand up? Will people fight? Or will they comply and sit in obedience?
I don't think we can answer that question. I think everybody in this room has to answer it for themselves. What are you going to do individually? I know me personally, I'm going to disobey as much as I can. Vote? Chad, voting doesn't work.
I think you vote
with your action. You just run a node, you just keep using Lightning, keep coin joining. I can't answer that question. Each individual has to answer that for themselves. Do you have the balls to actually do it?
I think most people are just going to comply and be obedient. At least in the beginning. We just watched over the last 2 years small businesses around the world get absolutely destroyed. These are the most favorable businesses in the country. Like, people love their small businesses, and they just sat by while their whole livelihood got absolutely destroyed. So if you think that people are going to stand up for Bitcoin, that people are going to stand up for freedom money, the majority of people will not. The cool part about Bitcoin, though, is Bitcoin is extremely robust. It's extremely secure. It's extremely state resistant at the protocol level, at the network level. The vulnerability is at the individual level. So there will be some people that stand up. There will be some people that push back. There'll be some people that just say, fuck you, and just continue as they be. And those people will be in it for themselves and in it for the people that are with them. But ultimately, I think more and more people will join that cause. There'll be pain, there'll be suffering in the middle. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we'll be in a better world where roughly 51% of energy will be used for Bitcoin mining.
All right. We are out of time. But before we officially leave the stage, I'd just like to get a comment from everybody here.
Final thoughts.
Whatever you're thinking about.
I'll just say, much love and support for HODLNOT. I hope anyone who hasn't contributed to him you know, spray some sats his way.
DefendingBTC.com. That fundraiser is still running. All support helps.
We got to plug another URL. Adam, you'll get a kick out of this.
Buginitiative.com.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're pro insect, consider it.
Buginitiative.com. Great site.
Final thought. It's just always amazing and inspiring to be in rooms full of Bitcoiners. I think, you know, I have a particularly fondness for, you know, seeing companies like Voltage, companies like Mash, companies like Bitcoin Company that, you know, 2 years ago were, you know, a guy or girl with an idea that are now, you know, selling merch, got full teams. You know, it's amazing to see the growth of the startup ecosystem. And, you know, I hope that all of you here continue to support your Bitcoin companies as they build products to bring more users onto the network.
I appreciate you guys asking me to join. That wasn't planned. I very much appreciate it. Good seeing you again, Ryan. Nice meeting you. As an older guy, thank you very much for allowing me to just be in the space and exist like everybody else. It's fantastic. And thank you, Gary. I love this conference you're putting on, man. Great job, Gary Leland.
Thank you, Gary.
I appreciate you, Gary. You throw a very special event. It's an honor to be here every year. And a huge shout out to your lovely wife, Kathy, she's just a special woman. So huge shout out to her. Thank you all.
Peace and love.